Blog Talk Radio.
Black Renaissance, white gold, white gold, white gold. Black Renaissance, white gold, white gold, white gold. Black Renaissance, white gold, white gold. Black Renaissance, white gold, white gold, white gold. It's a new summer era. We don't wanna see the heroes. We fighting against each other. It's the love that we need with one another. You understand? Trust might be love. Knowing through all, keep on going. Black Renaissance, white gold, white gold. Black Renaissance, white gold, white gold, white gold. Gotta get on your grind, don't confuse your mind. Let that dream come true. Stop playing a fool, chatting to my soul. Playing for forgiveness, never get lost in the world of sin. That's while I'm trying my vision. Seeing knowledge is given, knowing what's been hidden. Living life, only good intentions, not playing the victim. Standing my strength to perfection. Success is your best liquid. Becoming one of noble reflection. Positive vibration in the spirit. Turning for the moment with a blessing. Remember this lesson. Truth be told through these confessions. Why you guessing? Stop stressing. Stop stressing. Black Renaissance, white gold, white gold, white gold. Black Renaissance, white gold, white gold.
Good evening, everybody. Happy Sunday, and welcome to another Sunday of Urban Society. This is a Indy Morrell production, Dollhouse Radio, and you're listening to Urban Society. I'm your host, James A. Jones. And we have some issues to go into tonight. Our first issue is going to be, the aftermath of the terrorist attacks in Paris, France. And the second issue will be Don Lemon and Raven Simone. We're going to get into that tonight. We're going to see how that goes. And the third issue is going to be the University of Missouri issue. And the fourth issue will be Ebony Magazine article on Bill Cosby. We'll get into all of those. But first off, I want to say give a shout out to this commemorative day of it being the 52nd year. Well, today's the 52nd year of the assassination of the late President John F. Kennedy. That is, he was murdered on this day 52 years ago, November 22nd, 1963. And, give a shout out for that and memorial, so to speak, thoughts and memorial. But I do find it interesting that our news media, well, as far as I know, they haven't really shown anything about that today, commemorating it. And they really don't really show anything about that time in history, whenever that day does come about, commemorate, or to have us reflect on it as we do other tragic happenings in our country. I mean, that happening there was just as tragic as any other, the 9/11 situation in particular, just as tragic. But I would say, I think there, no doubt there are always reasons for whatever. But my thinking as to why our media, our country, don't really commemorate that day in memory of John F. Kennedy. No doubt is because there are a lot of unanswered questions about that day and about John F. Kennedy's murder. Probably a reason why it's not really mentioned as it ought to be mentioned. I think that is what it is exactly. So moving right along, we need not get bogged down on that. There's a lot to say about that. But again, like I said, moving right along, I want to also, first off, before we get into the main issues of tonight, I want to bring up something that that a Facebook friend had posted. I'm always on Facebook, and people are posting this and that, comments and whatever. Anyway, one of my Facebook friends had posted, "How can anyone mistake kindness for weakness?" And then she had used the abbreviation SMH, Sierra Mike Hotel. For those of us who are prior military, Sierra Mike Hotel, that's shaking my head. Anyway, one of the comments was, "Silly fools do it every day." And that's true. As well as it being true that too many people have a tendency, excuse me, to take to mistake kindness for weakness, or even kindness for stupidity also. But anyway, well, I have replied back with these words here, because I'm very much aware of that kind of mindset. And what I wrote was, "I think it's because they themselves aren't kind. Thus, when someone is kind to them, they aren't able to recognize it for what it actually is. Then, too, for them to be as they see another is, in regard to being kind, they think it is or would be a weakness or silliness or just plain stupidity." Then I wrote further, remembering something that occurred in my life. I had written this here. "I remember when I was caught up in doing drugs, a sister of mine who was also caught up told me, 'James, you're too nice in this thing.' I heard her. I knew what she meant. I knew I was too. Why or how? Basically because I was one who was able to share what I had, even in the drug life." Then I wrote, "Thus, in essence, her words were a condemnation of my character. I looked at her and asked her, 'How am I supposed to be? Like you?' And then I wrote, 'Never.' Because, you know, people are just, we're all the same, but then again, we're all different. And like I always say, also, we're all different, but we all are the same." I mean, going back to what brought this up, how can anyone mistake kindness for weakness? Interesting. But that's why I like being on Facebook, because people like to bring up issues and talk about things, sentiments and whatever. And I got something else here, too. There was also another Facebook posting that had the words with a picture on it. It said that the biggest genocide in human history didn't occur in Nazi Germany, but on American soil. 100 million Native Americans were slaughtered and lost their homeland. There was some guy who had replied. He said, "I was not part of it. I can't change it. I don't care. I don't live in the past. Sorry if you can't handle the truth." Let's see here. Okay, yeah. So what I had written in response to that, but also let me say this part also, in reference to that first part I read about the biggest genocide in human history didn't occur in Nazi Germany, but on American soil, 100 million Native Americans were slaughtered and lost their homeland. The other part of that caption reads, "Most of the people during the slaughtering were Christian. Sorry if you can't handle the truth." They wrote that also. But and that guy wrote that part about, "I was not part of it. I can't change it. I don't care. I don't live in the past." We've heard that all too often. You know, why you keep bringing up the past, live in the now, live in the moment, and things of that nature. But anyway, in reference to that, I had a reply for that. I had written this guy, his name was John. So I said, true, John, you weren't part of it directly, but indirectly, we all were and are. The past, present, and future are connected. And I also had written that it's a matter of interpretation. And I further wrote, do you appreciate what happened, or do you have a sense of a lack of appreciation for what happened to the indigenous people of this land in regards to how they were slaughtered and then the justifications which went with their slaughter? And then I wrote, the only good engine is the dead engine. What if the saying had been reversed to say, the only good European is a dead European? Then again, you might be one who thinks he's not European, but an American. Again, past, present, and future are connected. Your ancestors were from Europe. And also, this guy happened to have, I had seen a picture of him. He had posted on Facebook as well. And I noticed that he was wearing a military patch entitled Old Ironside. And because I had seen that, I had mentioned this as well. I said, oh, yeah, Old Ironside. I'm prior military. I had basic training at Fort Knox, Kentucky. There's a past, present, and future to Old Ironside. Do you stand by that history? And aren't you proud being connected to it? Wouldn't you want Old Ironside's history continued in the present and the future? Yeah. So I had threw that in there because he's talking about, you know, the past. But no doubt the history of Old Ironside, because that's military, that's the cavalry, if I'm not mistaken, Old Ironside. But it's a tank division also. And that particular division has a lot of history in our military history. And no doubt the individuals who are part of that unit, they're part of that history. They don't talk about, oh, that's past. No, 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 no. They want everybody to know what happened in the past with Old Ironside. You see, selective. A lot of people are selective in what they want to talk about concerning history, and then again, what they do not want to talk about concerning history. Interesting. Okay, and then one other thing, too, that I wanted to bring up. I think I had read an article in Yahoo, I do believe, and these people were talking about the recent terrorist attack there in France. And some people, some people just say things just to say things. Anyway, this guy here, he wrote, so if I allow someone to stock my refrigerator with 100 items and one of them was poisoned, should I allow my children to freely eat from it? If one lone wolf white supremacist guns down 20 inner city blacks, don't we call all white supremacists into question? And another guy had responded to what this guy said by saying, your supremacist analogy is horribly flawed. You are trying to argue that Muslims equal white supremacists. What you should have used was Muslims equal Christians. And in that argument, all Christians would not be called into question for a lone wolf act. Then what I have responded to that was he's also equating all Muslims with terrorists / terrorism, just as it's not logical to equate all Christians on the same level as Ku Kluxers. The same is true with equating all believers of Islam with terrorists. To his point, calling all white supremacists into question is valid, yet it's only valid if he also means calling all terrorists into question or calling all Muslims who are terrorists into question. A white supremacist is, by definition, one who would want to inflict terror onto black folk or onto others not white like themselves. It's amazing how some people put forth their so-called logic, which is not logic at all, but it's infused with just emotionalism. Donald Trump is the case in point with that. Terribly so. But anyway, it's now 15 minutes to the hour. We're going to go and talk to our first break with our first song from Raphael entitled Working for the Devil. This is Raphael, Working for the Devil. We'll be right back.
Brown skin, soft smile, just look at you, girl. Breaking rules, don't you make me throw this book at you, girl. Your booty, switch around, must know I look at you, girl. How'd you ever get so perfect? I mean, look at you, girl. Who you working for? Tell me who you working for. Who you working for? Tell me who you working for. Who you working for? Tell me who you working for. Who you working for? You must be working for the devil. You working for the devil. You working for him. You working for him. You working for the devil. You working for the devil. You working for him. You working for. You must be working for the devil. You working for the devil. You're way too perfect. You're way too perfect. You working for the devil. You working for the devil. I see the horns. It's in your charm. Girl, it's in the way that you move your hips. Usually in control, why I feel like this. Shot to Amaretto, got me thinking I'm rich. Make me wanna throw it all, what you put in my drink. You stare me in my eyes while you arch your back. Had kids, baby, how your body heal like that? Usually it's fuck women and get money, but tonight, I don't feel like that. Lights down low, it feel like a vacation. Things kinda change when you find out I'm Haitian. You know I would throw a couple bands, throw a couple bands. Baby, I'm a fan, baby, do your thing. No, I understand you the mug devil, full-blooded rebel. Trying to seduce my pockets, I'd be damned if I let you. But you don't even let me get my word in this discussion. You pour me a couple shots, get on the pole and get the bus. And I be trying to fight back, pop, pop. I don't wanna throw it, drop, drop. Pour a couple shots, shot, shots. I cannot control it, pop, pop. Effort, I'ma blow it, I got way more money, I'll figure out something. Shouldn't have trusted this girl for nothing. Once I found out who she working for, you must be working for the devil. You working for the devil. You working for him. You working for him. You working for the devil. You working for the devil. You working for him. You working for. You must be working for the devil. You working for the devil. You're way too perfect. You're way too perfect. You working for the devil. You working for the devil. I see the horns. It's in your charm.
Wait, wait, wait. I don't even know what to say, say, say. Watching you do whatever it takes, takes, takes. A struggle not to give it all away, wait, wait. You lying if you say you can't relate, late, late. Might be fake, fake, fake. Or gay, gay, gay. I ain't judging. But if you telling me that you don't feel some type of way, when she dance some type of way, move her ass some type of way. Why you came in here today? Throwing bands like you throw fits. When you pop it, I don't flinch. It's just me, myself, and almost called your ass a bitch. But you probably like that shit, right? Long as I put bad in front of it, right? Whisper in my ear to make you quit, right? Stop playing baby girl because I just might. Knowing me, when I step into my senses, you'll be back up on a pole by the next night.
Dealer of the devil, your body's what you're selling.
I'm just trying to find a deal for you and your friend. This ain't gon' end. Know that my morals are clear, but none of my morals are here. Once I found out who she working for.
You must be working for the devil. You working for the devil. You working for him. You working for him. You working for the devil. You working for the devil. You working for him. You working for. You must be working for the devil. You working for the devil. You're way too perfect. You're way too perfect. You working for the devil. You working for the devil. I see the horns. It's in your charm.
Raphael, can't you tell?
Okay, that was Raphael, his song Working for the Devil. Raphael, Working for the Devil. And welcome back to Urban Society here on Indy Morrell's Dollhouse Radio. And you listen to James Jones, your host. And do call in. Our call-in number here is area code 646-595-4038. Again, that's area code 646-595-4038. call in and let's see what you have to say, if anything. Or you can just listen if you want to. It's all good. Also, before we go into the main issues, I still have another miscellaneous issue I want to throw out there. It's just as important and relevant. But anyway, just having said the word miscellaneous, I want to tell a story about that word. It concerns a nephew of mine. When he was maybe 9 or 10 years old, he was in middle school at this point. And I recall how he had come to me with a book he was reading, and he was telling me how he wasn't getting the meaning of something that he was reading. And as he was passing me the book, you know, to help him out, to clarify what he may have been misunderstanding, he had asked the question, I'm reading this, he said, but who is Miscellius? And I said, Miscellius? So I read what he had been reading, and it turned out that the word wasn't Miscellius, but the word was miscellaneous. And I had to tell him that the word, well, miscellaneous isn't a person, but it's just a word that describes something. I never forget that. It was amusing. but it cleared up a lot of things in his head at that point, and that was good to see. Anyway, kids, God bless them. Anyway, so this article here is entitled Texas Mother Teaches Textbook Company a Lesson on Accuracy. The article starts off by saying in Houston, Kobe Berman, 15, a freshman at the suburban high school, was reading the textbook in his geography class last week when a map of the United States caught his attention. On page 126, a caption in a section about immigration referred to Africans brought to American plantations between 1500s and 1800s as workers rather than slaves. He reached for his cell phone and sent a photograph of the caption to his mother, Ronnie Dean Burren, along with a text message, "We was real hard workers, wasn't we?" The outrage over the textbook's handling of the nation's history of African-American slavery touched off a social media storm that led the book publishers, McGraw-Hill Education, to vow to change the wording and the school teachers to use other materials in class. And the article went further to say that in a section of the book describing America as a nation of immigrants and called Patterns of Immigration, the text with a map of the United States read, "The Atlantic slave trade between the 1500s and the 1800s brought millions of workers from Africa to the southern United States to work on agricultural plantations." It goes further to say that the authors on the page next to the map wrote of an influx of English and other European peoples, many of whom came as indentured servants to work for little or no pay, but made no mention of Africans came, but made no mention of how Africans came to the country. Revisionist history in the extreme. Revisionist wording. It's again a situation of how words can obscure situations, and intentionally too. Outrageous, simply outrageous. And the article goes further to say how it says here that in a memo sent to employees, David Levine, the president and chief executive of McGraw-Hill Education, issued an apology, calling the caption a mistake and saying the company was reviewing its internal procedures and increasing its list of textbook reviewers to reflect greater diversity. And then they have in quotes here, I guess, him saying, "We are deeply sorry that the caption was written this way. While the book was reviewed by many people inside and outside the company and was made available for public review, no one raised concerns about the caption, yet clearly something went wrong, and we must and we will do better." And at the end of the article, this Miss Dean Burren, the child's parent, she had written let's see how, let me get it correct here. She said that the teacher had not yet lectured on the chapter in the video she posted online. She pointed out the sections of the textbook that listed the many academic consultants, teacher reviewers, and members of a state advisory board who approved the book. And she said that these are all people, all professionals, who said yes to this book. Interesting. Like she said, those are all professionals who said yes to that book. But yet, and it went to print. And that book is in schools today. Because as the article pointed out, Texas somehow, for some reason, is a major distributor of school books in this country. Why that is interesting. It must be interesting as to why. It really must be interesting. And it's also worth just saying, I had mentioned earlier the murder of John F. Kennedy, the assassination. And it's interesting that they say the person who killed John F. Kennedy was in the sixth floor of the Texas School Book Depository. Again, a school book depository. Interesting. But, well, whatever. I won't go into all that, but that might be for another show. But also, I'm going into another article that I got off the internet earlier in the week. It says here that a girl ousted from class because of her natural hair. Yeah, like Obama likes to say, you can't make these things up. So it says again, girl ousted from class because of her natural hair. The article goes, student 13 is told her hair is too poofy and unprofessional. Maybe poofy means puffy, I don't know, but they do spell it P-O-O-F-Y, and puffy is P-U-F-F-Y. Maybe it's a misspelling, I don't know. Poofy, puffy. Anyway, an eighth grader in Toronto, now this is in Canada, an eighth grader in Toronto was removed from her classroom because the school's principal believed her hair was too, I'm going to say puffy, not poofy. Her hair was too puffy and unprofessional. Principal Tracy Barnes demanded the 13-year-old student to either pull back her hair or spend the rest of the period in her office. The girl, whose name is being protected by her family, says she was stunned by the actions of the principal, who is also black. I didn't see what the big deal was about my hair, because it wasn't bothering anybody, she told City News. I was just doing my work, so I didn't see why I had to be pulled out of class. The girl's aunt took to Facebook to express her anger with the principal and the damaging messages it gives off. This ignorant principal, well, this is her aunt talking. This ignorant principal demonstrated firsthand the heartbreaking ideas of beauty that are forced on our little girls, on our little dark-skinned black girls on a consistent basis, Kasia Kwanza wrote. My heart is breaking for my niece and all the little girls like her who already know that there is an unspoken ideal for good hair, who already know that the darker your skin, the more undesirable you are. The more undesirable you are. That must be a misprint there, but I'm going to go on and finish reading this. That people will automatically write you off because of the way you look. The aunt also had a few choice words for the principal, who she says needs to practice self-love rather than tear down the self-esteem of a young girl. And I guess her aunt is saying further, they have it in quotes, why are you so occupied with my niece's hair to the point that you would disrupt her learning? I would like to know what gives you the authority to be the decision maker on stunting my niece's dreams by telling her that she cannot achieve careers based off her looks. Why are you projecting self-hate onto my niece? Interesting. And in reading that article, I was really, well, I could say shocked, but I guess I was initially. But then that is shocked that that the principal was black and would come out like that, you know? I mean, but then again, I mean, as we know, I mean, racism, it's, well, the racist ideas, they go deep. Deep to the point wherein a racist person is a racist person, just automatically harbors ill will toward black people in particular. But yet the victim of racism, as quiet as it's kept, can also harbor those same kinds of sentiments concerning his or herself. Because of the constant stream of racism that's fed us in books, in the media, in our daily going to and fro in life. Interesting. But we live and learn. We live and learn. Then also I have this other article here about we might remember this police person who had claimed, well, he didn't claim, but he killed himself. It wasn't known then, but it turned out that he was killed, and people were, well, the way the initial report was reported, it was reported as if three individuals approached this police person and just executed him, killed him. And as we know, in the aftermath of that, you had many people talking about, you know, the Black Lives Matter movement, you know, caused this happening to take place because of the Black Lives Matter movement's anti-cop rhetoric. You know, it's making people go off the deep end. But anyway, it turned out that particular police officer killed himself, actually he did. And this article here, actually, it comes from Fox News, and the article is entitled, "It's Wrong to Blame Illinois Cops' Suicide on Black Lives Matter." And the article says that Fox News anchor Shep Smith threw shade at those who tried to connect Illinois' Lieutenant Charles Joseph Glendevic's death to the Black Lives Matter movement, including politicians, pundits, and media outlets. Think of the narrative that came out from that, from so many, many places. It's the fault of the Black Lives Matter movement. All of this stuff that was just, it really turned up the rhetoric, and it really was factually wrong. The Fox Lake police officer who died in September and was thought to have been murdered staged his own death, according to records released, Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker and Texas Senator Ted Cruz were among those who argued Glendevic's death was a result of a so-called war on cops. While Smith's Fox News colleague, Megyn Kelly, directly linked the incident to the movement. Smith pointed to fresh revelations in the documents, including that Glendevic attempted to hire a hitman to kill a village administrator he feared would expose him as a thief, and text messages stored in his phone that indicate he considered planting cocaine on the administrator to discredit her as a criminal. Investigators also unearthed evidence that Glendevic had been stealing money from a local police program he oversaw for years. Interesting. That's something else. And people were, you know, it turns out the cop committed suicide, and people were all, you know, tearful-eyed and sorry and blaming black people primarily, that if it weren't for black people, this cop wouldn't be dead now, and, you know, putting flowers all over the place, and now they're angry. And basically, they also want some money back, from what I heard from another situation. They do in fact want some money back. Okay, let me, because I have other miscellaneous articles here, but I'm going to go on into the first article, and then I may come on back into these miscellaneous articles later on in the show. Interesting. But anyway, the first article that I'm going to go into, well, the first issue, will be the Don Lemon situation. I'm sure that we had heard about that. But before we do, before we get started there, I believe that we're going to be coming up on our second music break. And let's see what Angela Royal is going to give us to listen to. But in the meantime, I'm going to go on with the article here concerning Don Lemon. Concerning a lot of people are upset with him because of his reporting on issues that pertain to, well, Black Americans or Black America, as some people like to say, in light of the tragedies that we see video taken of us being abused by whomever. Anyway, this article says here that Don Lemon's, the Don Lemon's fiasco in which he went toe-to-toe with former federal prosecutor Sonny Halston over issues stemming from the South Carolina high school student assaulted by a police officer, a new petition was created on change.org. The petition is calling for Lemon's removal from CNN and state the following. Since the tragic incident of Trayvon Martin, Mr. Don Lemon has consistently antagonized. Okay, I'm going to stop there and go on into our music break, but I'm going to come back to this article here. Our second song is going to be from Takara Hamilton entitled All In. So this is Takara Hamilton, All In. We'll be right back.
Flix, Amsterdam, Amsterdam.com.
All In. You ain't never got a question what it was or what it is. Baby, you're a blessing. You are everything I need and more. You ain't never got to worry about me loving you. You are all I want. You know I'm all yours. When you're not here, it's like I'm lost with no clue. It's crazy but amazing, I'm so into you. It's like I got the world and you're my private shore. And when we kissing, it's just like a trip of joy. You got me falling, and now I'm all in. I'm riding with you, don't need to think nor hesitate. I know we were perfect, we were meant to be. And when I see the future, I see you and me. So baby, let's see if you're you are my love, I got it for you.
All in. Quality and
I hope
today.
You see forever, forever and another lifetime. What we got is oh so special. You hold the key to my heart, I know. I never gotta worry about you hurting me. Trust and loyalty, you give that to me. Can't you see that you're my missing puzzle piece? It's crazy but amazing, I'm so into you. It's like I got the world and you're my private shore. And when we kissing, it's just like a trip of joy. You got me falling, and now I'm all in. I'm riding with you, don't need to think nor hesitate. I know we were perfect, we were meant to be. And when I see the future, I see you and me. So baby, let's see if you're
you know
if you are my love, I got it for you.
You gotta be.
You are my love, I got it for you.
Oh,
Okay, welcome back to Urban Society here on Indy Morrell's Dollhouse Radio. We just heard a song from Takara Hamilton entitled All In. That was Takara Hamilton, All In. And I'm your host, James A. Jones. And our calling number here is area code 646-595-4038. Again, that's area code 646-595-4038. Call in and let's hear what you have to say. So, okay, still on this article with Don Lemons, I'll go back to the beginning of this paragraph that I had left off on. It says here that since the tragic incident of Trayvon Martin, Don Lemon has consistently antagonized and defamed the characteristics of the African-American race on the national scale in mass communications. From the holding of the N-word sign before the national audience, to his most recent comments of the unfortunate incident where a student was removed from their chair and like a rag doll by an officer, Mr. Lemon has avoided the obvious to blatantly state that an attack on the African-American race is real and that real solutions need to take place. Okay, let me read that part again. It says, Mr. Lemon has avoided the obvious to blatantly state that an attack on the African-American race is real and that real solutions need to take place. Okay, I got that, right? Just wanted to make sure. We the people want a journalist and an anchor that will not be afraid to accept the facts that are occurring within the African-American community and who will encourage our people the same way that person will encourage others across the board. We the people have no confidence in Mr. Lemon's ability to do that. Therefore, we're asking CNN to remove him from his position. And the article states further to say, as of that time, which was maybe 2 weeks ago, and Don Lemon ain't gone nowhere, it says, so far the petition has received over 15,000 signatures, inching closer to his goal of 25,000. But then the article goes further to say that CNN and Lemon are in cahoots together. CNN signs Lemon's paychecks because he causes controversy. He says idiotic things all under the guise of journalism. Lemon was never supposed to be the voice of the black community on CNN or even the LGBTQ community. Lemon is the voice of whoever is controlling the teleprompter he's reading from, and that's CNN. The article says further that so maybe the petition shouldn't be aimed at Lemon. Maybe there should be a petition aimed at CNN, urging the network to do better with its choices of anchors. Gone are the days of Soledad O'Brien and Roland Martin. Lemon will more than likely remain a thorn in the side of CNN viewers for some time to come. Yeah, I remember when Roland Martin and Soledad O'Brien were there. And I also remember when they left. I don't know how long they were there, though, but one thing about Soledad O'Brien and Martin, Roland Martin, I think they left sometime after they had covered the Jeremiah Wright nationally televised speech he had given. And it was nationally televised by CNN, and I do recall some C-SPAN channels as well. You know, he kind of caught national attention because it was said that Barack Obama had attended his church, and they had shown the clip of Jeremiah Wright saying some words like, God damn America, and so on and so on and so forth. And they were talking about, and Obama, he goes to his church, and you want him to be president? So they gave Reverend Wright a whole segment for him to say things that he says. And I listened to that presentation. I heard it, and I thought it was quite good. And I'll also say, after the broadcast was over, they had Roland Martin and Soledad O'Brien there as anchors, and they both liked the speech. And I thought, oh, well, at least, you know, they liked it too. However, the next morning, it was a big change. The speech, by the next morning, the speech was considered divisive and bombastic and all that. I'm saying, what the fuck? Where'd they get all this from? And just saying, it was soon after that that Roland Martin and Soledad O'Brien were off CNN. Well, they gave Soledad a little longer run, but definitely not Roland Martin. But I found that highly interesting, primarily because they said the right thing. Well, maybe not primarily, but I never forget how they were in agreement with what Reverend Wright, how can I put it? They liked the presentation, or they liked the delivery of Reverend Wright's speech, and they liked the content of his speech. And they found nothing wrong with it at all. They more so praised it. But like I said, by the next morning, they had other people talking about all that other negative stuff. And I was thinking, oh, that was a quick change in them. But again, well, that's the way it went. And now we see who we got there. Somebody like Don Lemon is up there. Anyway, and then also Raven Simone. It turns out that she is under the same kind of fire, so to speak. Let me come here and get this out. I have some words there, but I'm going to bypass those words because we're moving right along here. I'm going to get on to some other issues here. This here says that ABC. Wait, I'm kind of laughing. as I read this one, it says that ABC is still raving about Raven, even if some viewers aren't so keen on the outspoken View co-host. The network came to the defense of Raven Simone following petitions to drop her from the daytime talk show. We love Raven, the network said in a statement. She is confident, genuine, and opinionated, all qualities that make her a great addition to the panel. The article goes further to say that change.org had already garnered over 120,000 signatures in support of removing the 29-year-old co-host from the show on account of her ignorant and self-hating spiel. African Americans and black people around the diaspora need a voice representative of their views and not a voice representative of what white people want us to say, the petition read. We need strong black role models in prominent positions on television, and Raven Simone cannot provide that. It says here that the petition originally created on Thursday, October 29th, comes hot on the heel of Raven Simone's recent controversy outburst, this time about her thoughts on the Spring Valley High School assault incident. The former child star defended the police officer who took extreme measures to punish a girl who refused to get off her cell phone. And they had Raven Simone in quotes here saying, the girl was told multiple times to get off the phone. There's no right or reason for him to be doing this type of harm. That's ridiculous. But at the same time, you got to follow the rules in school. First of all, why are there cell phones in school? This shouldn't even be a problem to begin with. And he shouldn't have been acting like that on top of it. Raven Simone also previously made controversial comments about how she would not hire an applicant with a ghetto name, and said that she later apologized for that. That's Raven Simone. But again, I mean, actually, I don't watch her show. And lately, I mean, I really watch the news now anyway. So, I mean, you know, God bless Don Lemon and God bless Raven Simone both. I mean, they got jobs. And like I always say, they know who they want in those positions. I mean, the CNN producers and the producers of that show, The View, they knew who they want on that show. They know exactly who they want. So therefore, they're doing exactly what they want to do. They wouldn't have anybody other than a Don Lemon on CNN, for real. And they wouldn't have anybody other than a Raven Simone on The View. Interesting. Well, that's just the way it is. But, hey, I mean, we don't have to watch that show. That's all. That's the way I see it. So I want to go first a bit into the aftermath of the terrorist attack in Paris, France. Well, as we know, by having seen the news, what's going on there, we're told that they have killed most of the people who were involved in that situation there in Paris, France. That's one aftermath of this situation. But what I will say before I go further, we notice how quickly, you know, the state had come down on those people. And everybody is, you know, yeah, hurrah, hurrah, hurrah. But I find it kind of interesting as well that, as it had been mentioned, when that South Carolina situation with that terrorist, that white terrorist who shot those people, killed those people in that church, I mean, there should have been a lot of anger then too. But all the talk was about how forgiving the people of that congregation were. And these people were actually lauded for their feelings of forgiveness. But yet when it comes to an action like, let's say, this thing there in Paris, where's the forgiveness? I mean, where is the talk of forgiveness? Or that these people were just misguided, and we ought to overlook this. We ought to overcome them with our capacity to love. I mean, in a real sense, this is what they want. Well, basically, black folk to do, in a real sense. When these egregious things happen with us, we're not supposed to be angry. Well, more so, we're told not to be angry. It suggested, you know, it's a tragedy, but get over it. Get over it. But like I say, the authorities in France, they're coming down hard on these people. I mean, really, killing them. I mean, there's always, you know, a certain nuance to killing and, how can I put it, killing and then murder. I don't really want to say it like that, but justified killing and then just, I guess, what, non-justified killing? But the question is, always does come up, is there ever a reason to kill? Can killing ever be justified? That's still being debated today. But then again, as we know, some people kill for no reason at all, none at all, or for money. Interesting. That's no reason. But anyway, another aftermath of this situation is, you know, the people who are fleeing that area there in Syria and going hither and thither, you know, different, trying to immigrate to different parts of the world. And certain countries, there are some countries who are taking them, you know, right on in. But it seems right now the European countries primarily are saying no, 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 no. It's like they're blaming they're blaming all Syrian people for the acts of, well, a few of them. But then again, the way it's somewhat coming out, it's almost as if the people who did this act, they may not be Syrian after all. Because I think I do recall having heard that one of the passports found on one of the assailants, it was a forged passport, indicating that, it wasn't a Syrian passport, number one, but that doesn't necessarily mean that the person who had it wasn't Syrian, but we can also think that as well, that if it was a forged passport, the possibility is that the person who had this forged passport wasn't Syrian. And then even in this country, I mean, we have primarily, well, not only Republicans, but Democrats as well, talking about a further screening situation for Syrians who want to come in this country. And we're hearing President Obama say that the screening process is already stringent enough, strong enough. Okay, I'm going to leave off there because we have our next break, 25 after the hour, and this is a song from Jasmine entitled, Jasmine Sullivan, entitled Brand New. So here we go. We'll be right back.
Had a dime for every new with a rap dream. You know the girls will be riding, working two jobs, but the boys at home making mixtapes with a don't disturb on the door now. Been I buy a Jeep dress every Friday, cause I go to every show on the weekend. And I gotta look good when I'm prepping. Yeah, he about to sign a deal.
He about to go.
Society here on Indy Morrell's Dollhouse Radio. We just heard a song from Jasmine Sullivan, her song entitled Brand New. Let me spell her name for y'all so that we'll get it correct. Her name is spelled Jazmine. So it looks like Jasmine to me, or it could be Jasmine. Last name is Sullivan, her song Brand New. And I'm your host, James A. Jones. Our call on here is area code 646-595-4038. Again, that's area code 646-595-4038. Call in, let us hear from you. Excuse me. Okay, on this article, the aftermath of the terrorist attack there in Paris and what's taking place, what we're hearing a lot of in the news. But I find it, interesting also that what we're not hearing a lot of in the news. I mean, a good question could be, or should be, who is this group called ISIS? How did this group called ISIS come about? I know there are various theories, or interpretations as to how it came about. But aside from that, we can say that one thing that we know concerning Syria is that for a long time now, and let us say initially, we were hearing President Obama talking about how the Syrian leader there should step down. I mean, the president of another country called Syria, another president is telling him to step down. I think reverse that, that would be like him, President Assad of Syria, telling President Obama to step down. But, I mean, I guess somehow there's no equality there. There's no equilibrium there, no balance there somehow. But anyway, as I'm saying, as we know how this thing first started, not just President Obama, but other European leaders of other European countries were saying that Assad, President Assad, should step down. And then the next thing we hear about is Syrian rebels. Syrian rebels meaning that those who are for this President Assad stepping aside. And rebels got guns in hands ready to make him step aside. So we have the rebels fighting against the Syrian government. And then we have ISIS, another group called ISIS. Are they Syrian rebels also? If so, why aren't they called Syrian rebels? Some say that they have come out of Iraq or some kind of way or something like that. But whatever, they are there in Syria, and it says that they are holding ground, holding territory. But what about the rebels? I mean, it's convoluted things that are coming out from that country, and it's awful that we really don't know what's happening. We really don't. We really don't. All that we do know is that because of the destabilization of that government, and then therefore that area, people are fleeing that particular spot of Earth and going elsewhere. We're seeking to go elsewhere. And a lot of people's minds now is, who are these people? Some are saying, for all we know, they could be, you know, a Trojan horse type thing. But are they? We don't know this. We don't know. Some are saying that, you know, the Syrians who are coming, they could be, you know, potential terrorists. But then again, we are being told point blank up front, and then too being shown pictures that, in essence, women and children are coming, not a lot of men. This is what we're being told, but we don't know what's happening. We really don't. But then again, falling back on what I was saying earlier about, you know, where did ISIS come from? And these rebels, I mean, where are these arms which they are fighting with coming from? These are all questions, I think, that we should know, that should be talked most about on our news. How do we get into this situation? What has brought us here? You know, what has brought us to this issue of Paris being attacked by, well, in that way? What brought about this terror attack? What's behind it? And then again, as we know, there are some who are saying that the Paris government itself set that up just so that they can further bomb Syria and also get rid of President Assad there in Syria. Interesting. So just saying, I mean, just talking about that, you know, now we have France doing a lot of bombing there in Syria. So the question could be, are French planes bombing ISIS-held positions? Or are they bombing President Assad-held positions? You know, the government positions that are being held. Or are French planes bombing both ISIS and Assad? We don't know this. We don't know this. But it's the way it is, political. And it's all about money. It's just outrageous. And then again, I mean, all these people caught up in the situation. And, you know, those unfortunate people there in France also being caught up in that situation. Innocent people. And then again, the people who are fleeing Syria. Innocent people caught up in that madness. Because what? Somebody wants control of something. And therefore, somebody wants control of something so they can make more dollars. You know, it's the thing about, you know, putting money ahead of human beings. Some people think like that. But anyway, going off that and going on into the other issue, excuse me, the University of Missouri situation. I found that interesting. I do find it interesting, and I have a few articles here. And one article is entitled "What Mizzou?" I guess that's the abbreviation for, I guess, the University of Missouri. It says "What Mizzou Yale students need to learn about free speech." I mean, this article here, unfortunately, the one that I have is slanted really against the protesters because of them not allowing, I guess we could say, some of the school journalists to cover their protest. I mean, that's a long story, but anyway, this article here is coming from that perspective about free speech. It says here that protesters win victory for freedom of expression while too often denying it to others, including the press. But I'm just saying, last week I was going to go into this issue also, and then last week I had another article that I wanted to read from, and it had concerned, if I'm not mistaken, I forget which university this was at, because what's going on there at the Missouri University, as it's now being said, is actually going, well, not actually going on, but the same thing that are taking place there are taking place throughout this country at any given university where black students happen to be. They are all facing the same thing in institutions of higher learning. Yes, in institutions of higher learning. One would think that this wouldn't be an issue in institutions of higher learning. But evidently, that is not the case. We are where we are, and these students, black students, are speaking up and out about it. But anyway, last week I had an article before me about one of those universities. It may have been Yale or it could have been the University of Missouri. I think it was, well, I'm just going to say what I was reading. It was talking something about how during the Halloween time, something about costumes and about students wearing certain costumes. And it turned out that certain black students were feeling offended by some of the costumes that some of the white students wanted to wear because of the racial nature of those costumes. And it turned out that the university administrators were basically telling the black students, you know, it's their freedom of expression to wear what they want to wear on Halloween. And therefore, look the other way. Just get over it. There's that phrase again. Get over it when it comes to us. Get over it. Yeah. But anyway, you know, I was reading that article, and somehow it wasn't making a lot of sense to me. I mean, I'm thinking, well, maybe it was miswritten. But anyway, when I happened to have heard, I wasn't really watching The View, but somebody had posted on Facebook a certain segment of The View wherein, what's the guy? I forget his name right now, but he's on CNN often. Mark Lamont, that's his name. He's some kind of a university professor, and he's on CNN and other news outlets somewhat. CNN a lot, I'll put it like that. And then this student, her name is Bree Baker. She was telling exactly what that whole fuss was about. And in essence, it was basically about what I just said, that white students were, I don't know what kind of costumes that they were wanting to wear, but the black students felt that these costumes were highly offensive and that they shouldn't be wearing them if they had any, let us say, I don't really want to use the word racial sensitivity, but I'll put it this way. The black students felt that if these students had attended any racial sensitivity classes, then they would know that that kind of costume isn't appropriate in 2015. I'll put it like that. But I found what she was saying highly informative. And then this article here that I have here says, I got to read it again. It says, protesters won a victory for freedom of expression while too often denying it to others, including the press. And the article says that as a student of University of Missouri in the 70s, I learned about the then recent civil rights movement and the role of the First Amendment in a free society. It appears the curriculum has changed. On the one hand, students peaceful protests against racial discrimination and unprecedented engagement of Missouri's football team and coach led to the departure of the Missouri system president Tom Wolf and Chancellor R. Bowen Lofton. Students used the full range of amendment freedom, speech, press, petition, assembly, and faith to accomplish social and political change. On the other hand, when reporters tried to report on these developments, they found student protesters carving out a chunk of university property as a private camp, proclaiming that journalists were not welcome. And I read another article wherein there was a journalist who was, in a real sense, standing up for what the students were doing. And he referred to it as them creating what's coming in vogue today, a phrase called free space. You know, almost like in a war zone. I mean, they have, I guess you can call it, I forget the name that they use, but they say like a free area or an area that's not supposed to be touched by combat or military personnel. You know, and now here in university, they're talking about a free space, having a free space that's supposed to be free from racism or, you know, racist taunts and racist chants and racist provocation. Interesting, free space in a university. Anyway, it says, the incident gives critics of political correctness ammunition. They point to the hypocrisy of the students who demand to be heard but are willing to silence others. That reminds me right there of something that another Facebook friend of mine, Dr. Stacy Patton, had written. It's too bad that I don't have it with me, but she kind of hit it right on the head when she had said that the N-word. Then she said, Dookie swastikas equals free speech. But then she said, but when blacks protest against racism, what did she say that was called? She said it's called some kind of aggression. I got it wrong, but she hit it right on the head the way she said it. I wish I had that in front of me now. But it was right on the way she had written what she had written. Again, I mean, like the N-word, whites using the N-word, that's considered freedom of expression, free speech. And, you know, as in Missouri here, they say that they actually use manure to make a swastika somewhere there. And to somebody, that's freedom of expression, free speech. They have a right to do this based upon their First Amendment right. But yet, when black people protest or speak about racism, it's considered hate speech. That's what she said. It's considered hate speech. Interesting. Very much so. So therefore, this guy who has written this article, he's one of those people. He's coming from that perspective. Anyway, there's more here that I wanted to read out, because I'm going to go on and leave that article there. And this was the article here wherein this journalist was speaking on behalf of the students who were protesting. And he used that phrase, students wanted to create a safe space. That's what they called it, a safe space, from not only the racism they encounter on campus, but the insensitivity they encounter in the news media. And this guy here says that video of a confrontation between a news photographer and protesters at the University of Missouri led to a dispute between journalists and the activist sympathizers beyond the campus walls. In response to a series of racial issues at the university, a circle of arm-length students sought to designate a safe space around an encampment on the campus quad. When the block journalist, Tim Tay, when they blocked journalists, Tim Tay, from photographing the encampment, reporters complained that media were denied access to public space. And this guy goes further to say, certainly, Tay, like any journalist, had a legal right to enter the space, given that it was in a public area. But that shouldn't be the end of the story. We in the media have something important to learn from this unfortunate exchange. The protesters had a legitimate gripe. The black community distrusts the news media because it has failed to cover black pain fairly. He goes on to say that as a journalist, I understand how frustrating it is to be denied access to a person or place that's essential to my story. I appeared with other journalists on local media in New York City to discuss our frustration over Mayor Bill de Blasio's sometimes standoffish attitude towards the press. He is a public figure whose salary is paid with tax dollars. He is obligated to be accessible to us. The student protesters Tay encountered didn't owe him anything. They did not represent a government entity. They were young people trying to build a community free not only of racism that had recently racked Missouri's campus, but also of the insensitivity they encounter in the news media. He goes further to say that as a journalist, we should strive to understand the motivations of people we cover. In this case, black students at the University of Missouri have had a string of racist encounters on campus. The president of the Students Association was called the N-word, and other black students have been racially harassed while participating in campus activities. A Missouri journalism professor wrote in the Huffington Post that she had been called the N-word too many times to count during her 18 years at the university. Interesting. And it says here further that in February 2010, black students woke up to cotton balls strewn over the lawn of the Black Culture Center on campus. The crime carried out by white students was designed to invoke plantation slavery. I'm going to stop there and say that backing up to what Dr. Stacey Patton was saying about for whites what represents freedom of expression and what is considered consistent with their First Amendment rights and privileges. I laugh, but it's not funny. But God bless, I can laugh at something like this. Interesting. Anyway, I guess as I was going to say before I started chuckling there, I guess to these students who put cotton balls all over the lawn of the Black Cultural Center, I guess to them, that was them exercising their First Amendment privilege, freedom of expression. What were they expressing? That's the question there. What were or did they think they were expressing? And then, okay, back to the article here. It says, establishing a safe space was about much more than denying the media access. It was about securing a zone where students' blackness could not be violated. Yes, the hunger strike, the safe space, and other demonstrations were protests, and protests should be covered. But what was fueling those protests was black pain. In most circumstances, when covering people who are in pain, journalists offer extra space and empathy. That didn't happen in this case. These young people weren't treated as hurting victims. Instead, after the confrontation with Ty, a grieved journalist responded with a ferocity usually reserved for powerful entities with the means to inflict lasting damage on their First Amendment rights. Interesting. But that's the way that was. And that's the way it is. But like I said, and these things take place in institutions of higher learning. And that makes me also think about the many black professionals that we have in this country. I mean, they went to these schools, and they therefore experienced what these black students are experiencing. But these black students are saying, no, not no more. These black students are speaking up on their own behalf about what should and should not take place. And no doubt some people are saying that, you know, that like they're going too far, that they ought to just go there for their education and, you know, just do that and get out of there. But I understand exactly where they're coming from as to why they just can't get on with their education. I mean, for me, it's always been interesting how it is that that concerning black people, how some of us can, in fact, you know, put up with so much of that. I mean, have it breathing down your neck in a real sense, and then don't say nothing. Ignore it. Supposedly because this is not what I mean. That's happening, but that's not why I'm here. This is just for the moment, but I've got to get what I've got to get and while I'm here and why I'm here. But at the same time, you got MS breathing down your back every time you sit down. Well, breathing down your neck every time you sit down, wherever you sit down. And you're supposed to be in an environment like that and study something? Well, to that, I guess I can say some of us can and some of us can't. And then, too, some of us will not. That is also a truism. It has to be. And I can only imagine further that perhaps just saying, I don't know for sure if this could be a reason, but just opinionating here, this might be a reason why there are more black women going to college and in college than there are black men. That could be a reason why that is. Some will say that, the black male is turned off early on from education or being educated. Therefore, that's why he doesn't make it as far as the black female. But then again, even to that, what I would say is that just as it is in university levels, it's the same way in elementary school level as well. A male child is going to be a male child. You know, he's going to be, to use the word, rambunctious. I mean, just so. I don't want to say that that's his nature, but that's in his environment. But at the same time, consider, okay, girls, and let's use black girls as the prime example. Wherever the black girl is, she is told to what? Act like a young lady. You're not supposed to be rambunctious. You're not supposed to be running and jumping and hollering. You're supposed to be quiet. You're supposed to be sedate. And black girls do that. God bless them. They do that. They can. But again, not all of them. Some of them are a lot like, you know, they, no. They say, no, F that. You're not going to put your hands on me. You know what I'm saying? Stuff like that. But I kind of got off track there. But then again, I think I still am on track with this situation that's currently being shown at the university level. This racist antagonism that black people face, the student as well as the administrator, or I'm saying administrator, but I'm saying more so the student as well as the black teacher, the black faculty. They experience this stuff also, even at that level. And again, I have to use the word, excuse me, institutions of higher learning. I guess it's better to say in so-called institutions of higher learning. Because if that nonsense is there too, where's the higher learning? I mean, really, if an educator, a professor, can be just as racist as a racist, what, sixth grader? Or let me put it this way. If a professor who is racist is as racist as an individual who only has a sixth grade education, where is that professor's higher learning? His or her, where is their higher learning? It's not there. Let us say that then, therefore, it may be in other spheres, but it's not in the sphere of humane treatment toward another human being. It's not there. It's absent. It's vacant. And that's where the learning really should be. I mean, that would be about the process of socialization, because in a real sense, that's what going to school is supposed to help us become socialized, become social in our interactions in the world. Interesting. Very much so. But I understand now I only have, or we, because those of you who are listening, you all are part of this as well, so we only have about 2 minutes, if 2 minutes, but we're going down to basically a minute of time. But anyway, well, I did touch on a few issues here, and I do wish that people do begin to call in. I hope you all will. Somebody will call in next week, but we'll see what happens. Or you can just sit back and listen to, well, what I'm talking about, and enjoy the conversation. So I'm going to be signing off at this time. This is Urban Society, James Jones signing off on Dial House Radio. You all have a good night. Till next week. Have a good night.
Leaning to the right, mud in my two cups. I've been faded all night. I love calling you at 4 in the morning, faded, telling you things about me I wouldn't tell you sober. I got problems big enough to break the realest nigga. I got family who never see the bigger picture. I got women bad enough to turn the straightest bitches. I keep flirting with these hoes, but I never finish. 'Cause Cause I do not know when I'ma go, when I'ma die. So I drink and I smoke, I stay lit. I stay lit. Yeah, so I stay lit.
Turn up,
somebody pass me an already lit spliff.
Do it.
I'm way too faded to roll one.
Just do it.
Fitting in with all the misfits.
Do it.
I need a cold one. I got problems big enough to break the realest niggas.
Yeah.
I got family who never see the bigger picture.
Yeah, no,
I got women bad enough to turn the straightest bitches.
Oh.
I keep flirting with these hoes, but I never finish. Cause I do not know. When I'ma die, so I drink and I smoke, I stay lit. I stay lit. Yeah, so I stay lit. Stay lit.
Turn up,
yeah, stay lit.